Fact is, whether we're willing to admit it or not, many of us have wondered about the existence of God. In fact, I'm confident that the only people who never doubt God are those who never really think.
Welcome to Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress, and thank you for tuning into the program today. We are very excited about this brand new series we're kicking off today called How Can I Know? Answers to Life's 7 Most Important Questions. We're going to be looking at topics like, how can I know the Bible is true? How can I know Christianity is the right religion? How can I know God is good with all the suffering in the world today? And more, including today's fundamental question. You know, doubt is a powerful emotion because it causes us to question everything associated with it. And that's why we need to start things off by addressing this very basic question. So here's Dr. Robert Jeffress with the first part of this introductory message from this brand new series called, How Can I Know There Is a God?
I was saved by God when I was 5 years old. I was called by God into the ministry when I was 15 years old. I made a pledge to God to remain faithful to my wife when I was 21 years old. I serve God by pastoring a church. I speak and write a lot about the subject of God. I talk to God in the morning, at night, and throughout the day. And at times I wonder if God really exists. And I'm not alone. I imagine if most of you are truly honest, you would have to say there are times that you question the existence of God. Now, I know there are some people, and I run into them all the time in the church. They say, well, Pastor, not me. I may question a lot of things in life, but I've never questioned that there is a God who loves me. In fact, George Gallup, who regularly polls Americans' attitude about things religious, has revealed in a recent survey that 9 out of 10 Americans still say they believe in God, which is an amazing statistic. However, I have a sneaking suspicion that people's confidence in the existence of God is not as strong as they would pretend that it is. Daniel Dennett is one of the new atheists who has written a book entitled Darwin's Dangerous Idea. He's launched a vitriolic broadside against Christianity. And even though I disagree with everything Dennett says in his book, I have to agree with one thing he says in his book. He draws a distinction between what he calls belief in God and belief in belief. It's his contention that if you probe those 9 out of 10 Americans who say they believe in God, what you'll find is they don't believe in God. What they believe in is their belief in their belief about God. That is, in their belief that is rooted in tradition and culture. It's not a true believing in God, because after all, Dennett asked, if 9 out of 10 Americans really believed in God in this country, wouldn't this country look differently than it does today? The fact is, whether we're willing to admit it or not, many of us have wondered about the existence of God. In fact, I'm confident that the only people who never doubt God are those who never really think. I agree with Pastor Mark Buchanan's claim that the depth of our doubt is roughly proportional to the depth of our faith. Those with strong faith have equally strong doubts. And that principle bears out in the other direction as well. People with a trivial and a shallow faith usually have trivial and shallow doubts. This series, How Can I Know?, is for those of you who have doubts about religious issues. Perhaps you have sat in church for years and in decades, and you know you should know the answers to these questions. You should feel confident about your beliefs. But there are doubts that you have, and quite frankly, you're embarrassed to voice those doubts. Having doubts is not a sin. In fact, it's a prerequisite for a strong faith. And in this series, we're going to attempt to answer your doubts in a very compassionate and an intelligent way. Why is it, first of all, that we, even who profess to be Christians, sometimes have doubts about the existence of God? I believe there are at least 5 sources of doubt that cause us to question the existence of God. First of all, some of our doubts are natural doubts. You can tell your child the tooth fairy exists. You can describe her beauty and intelligence. You can even leave evidence of her underneath your child's pillow. But after a while, your child comes to the conclusion that the tooth fairy is imaginary. And it's only a short leap from doubts about the tooth fairy to doubts about the big man up there. Of course, I'm talking about Santa Claus. And it's just hard to believe in anything or anyone we haven't seen before. Now, the good news is God not only understands our propensity to doubt his existence, he empathizes with our doubts. My conviction isn't based on some warm, fuzzy thought I have about who I hope God is. No, it's actually based on what God has said about him and those of us who doubt from time to time. There's a little book tucked away in the New Testament. It's a small book, one chapter. It's right before the book of Revelation. Most of us miss it on our race to the book of Revelation. But in Jude verse 22, God through Jude offers these words. He says, "Be merciful to those who doubt." Be merciful to those who doubt. Those six words give you some insight into how God views those of us who occasionally doubt his existence, even though we've devoted our lives to serving him. Some of our doubts are philosophical doubts. Some people doubt the existence of God on philosophical grounds, and perhaps the most cited philosophical argument against the existence of God is the presence of evil and suffering in the world. The Scottish skeptic David Hume summarized the argument this way. He said, "If God is able to prevent suffering and evil in the world, but doesn't prevent it, then it means he's evil. If God, on the other hand, is willing to prevent suffering in the world, but he's not able to prevent it, it means he's impotent. If God is both willing and able to prevent evil and suffering in the world, then how do you explain the existence of evil?" It's a good question. And it's one we're going to answer in a later session, because there is another explanation to reconciling evil with a God who loves us. Third, some of our doubts are experiential doubts. You know, we all tend to be prisoners of our experience, don't we? And that transcends to the spiritual arena as well. If we grew up in a house where God was not believed in, then we will be prone to disbelief in God as well. Now, of course, there's some notable exceptions to that. Some years ago, I invited William Murray, the son of the late atheist Madeline Murray O'Hare, to come and address our congregation. As you know, William Murray became a Christian. And in his testimony, he described our congregation, what it is that led him to faith in Christ. He said, as he looked at his mother's unhappiness and inconsistencies in her lifestyle, it caused him to reject his mother's belief system, which in this case happened to be a disbelief in God. But the experience that causes most of us to doubt the existence of God is an experience we all have from time to time, and that is being disappointed by God. The betrayal by a mate, the abuse of a parent, the reality of unanswered prayer causes many people to come to the conclusion there is no God. Ted Turner was the media mogul who founded CNN, and he traces his own rejection of Christianity to something that happened to him as a young teenager. He prayed to God over and over again that his older sister would be healed from cancer. She wasn't healed. She died, and Ted Turner turned his back on Christianity. Experiential doubts. Fourth, spiritual doubts are sometimes the source of our denial of the reality of God. We assume that most atheists are intellectual giants who have looked at all of the evidence, philosophical and scientific, and they have come to the conclusion that God cannot exist. We sometimes harbor the secret fear that atheists have discovered the smoking gun that disproves once and for all the existence of God. I'll have to admit that sometimes I succumb to that fear, that atheists know something I don't know. They're smarter than I am. They have some evidence I don't have. And that's why they've rejected God. I remember the first time I ever debated the president of the American Atheist Association on national television. I was very apprehensive about the debate. I wondered what fiery dart would he pull out of his intellectual arsenal that he would use to shoot down before a national audience my belief in God. I need not have worried. The fact is, his arguments were tepid and unconvincing at best. And it only went to prove what I had believed and taught for a long time. The reason that atheists reject God is not for intellectual or philosophical reasons. Atheists reject God because of spiritual and moral reasons.
You're listening to Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress. and we'll get back to the message in just a moment. Dr. Jeffress is an accomplished best-selling author, and he's just come out with a brand new book that's the foundation of this series called How Can I Know? Answers to Life's Seven Most Important Questions. He said, "In my experience as a pastor, many Christians who have been sitting in the pews for decades cannot answer the most basic questions, like how can I know there's a God? How can I know the Bible is true? How can I know Christianity is the right religion?" and others. Many believers have doubts about these questions themselves but are afraid to voice them. At some point, every Christian has questions or uncertainties about their faith. That's why you need to get a copy of this incredible new book called How Can I Know? By Dr. Jeffress. It's going to help you not only answer your questions, but those from your friends and coworkers. Get your copy today with your generous gift to Pathway to Victory by calling us at 1-866-999-2965. That's 866-999-2965. Or online at ptv.org. And for $75 or more, you're going to get the book, How Can I Know?, along with the TAB Study Guide binder and all 11 CDs from this series. So call now, 1-866-999-2965, or online at ptv.org. I'll mention all that a bit later, but right now, let's get back to the rest of the program. Here's Dr. Jeffress.
The Apostle Paul said that. In Romans chapter 1, he reminded the Roman Christians that the evidence for God's existence is everywhere around us. In Romans 1, verses 18 to 20, the apostle says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness. Because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible attributes, that is, his eternal power and his divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood through that which has been made, so that they are without excuse." Paul says the evidence for God's existence is so abundant in the cosmos that there is no one on this planet who has an excuse for not believing in God. As we'll see in the next few moments, the evidence for God is everywhere around us. So the question is, why do people ignore this evidence? Paul answers that question in verse 21. He says, "For even though they," that is the pagan, the atheist, "knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened." Although the atheist has received this knowledge of God, he has intentionally rejected that knowledge. Why has he rejected it? Because the atheist is smart enough to understand that if indeed he acknowledges there is a God who created him, then it's only reasonable that he is obligated to serve and obey that God. And the atheist is unwilling to do such a thing. And so, for spiritual, moral reasons, he refuses to believe in God. You see, the popular thinking we have is that an atheist is some sincere seeker of truth who's going around looking for some possible evidence for the existence of God. But as he looks around, he can't find any, and so he is forced to give up his belief in God. Nothing could be further from the truth. The atheist is not a sincere follower of truth. He's not looking for God. An atheist has no more interest in finding God than a thief has in finding a policeman. He doesn't want to submit himself to God. That's why he rejects God. But not only does he reject the truth about God, Paul goes on to say the atheist replaces that truth with his own truth. Verses 22 to 23 of Romans 1, Paul continues, "Professing to be wise," and oh, these new atheists, they love to profess to be wiser than any of us. "Professing to be wise, they became fools. They exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for the image and the form of a corruptible man and of birds and of four-footed animals and crawling creatures." He's talking about the replacement of the true God with idols or ideas that either eliminate God or at least reduce God to a more manageable being, someone to our liking. When I read that phrase, the image of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures, I immediately think of the theory of evolution. The theory of evolution is nothing more than another faith-based attempt to explain the origin of all things. The evolutionist is man's attempt to replace God as the necessary cause of all things created, or at least to reduce the role of God in creation to nothing but a passive bystander. Don't let anyone fool you. Evolution is just as much of a religion as creationism is. Evolution has just as much to say about God as creationism does. Evolution is based on as many presuppositions as creationism is. When it comes to the origin of the world, the origin of life, the evolutionist comes to the table with this presupposition. He comes to the table with the presupposition, there is no God, and therefore I must find some other alternative explanation for why things are. The creationist comes to the discussion by believing in the existence of God and believing Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But both points of view have something to say about God. Now, some people want to dismiss the idea completely, replace the idea of God. Other people simply want to reduce God to one they find more likable and manageable. I think about Rabbi Harold Kushner. Rabbi Harold Kushner lost his son as a young teenager to a disease that resulted in death, and Kushner concluded after seeing his young son die that he could no longer believe in an omnipotent God who had the ability to intervene in human affairs. Instead, Rabbi Kushner said, even God, quote, even God has a hard time keeping chaos in check. And that, quote, God is a God of justice, but not a God of power, end of quote. Kushner's attempt to shrink God into somebody he could understand and agree with at all times reminds me of the wag who said, in the beginning, God created man in his own image, and ever since that time, man has tried to return the favor. We sometimes want to replace God or refashion God for spiritual reasons, not for intellectual reasons. Fifth, empirical doubts sometimes cause us to question the existence of God. Now, I don't know of an atheist anywhere who's willing to admit that he is intentionally rejecting all of the evidence that there is for God for spiritual reasons. Instead, what the atheist will do is try to convince you to believe that science has driven a final nail into theism, the belief in God. Richard Dawkins is another one of those new atheists. And in his best-selling book, The God Delusion, Dawkins claims that it is impossible to be a scientific thinker and to be a theist, a believer in God. And to prove his claim, he cites a 1998 study showing that only 7% of American scientists who belong to the National Academy of Sciences believe in a personal God. Only 7% of scientists who belong to the National Academy of Science believe in a personal God. You know, that shakes some people up when they hear that statistic. Because the average person who believes in God says to himself, okay, A, scientists are smarter than I am. B, the majority of scientists don't believe in God. Therefore, C, my belief in God must be based on fable rather than fact. But people who come to that conclusion miss two important points. First of all, this study that Richard Dawkins cites fails to identify the cause-effect relationship between scientists and their beliefs. You see, we assume that the reason only 7% of scientists believe in God, we assume that scientists started out with a belief in God, and then they examined the evidence and had to come to the intellectual conclusion there is no God. But how do we know that's the order it happened in? Could it also be that people who become scientists, by and large, are people who have rejected what the Bible says about God, and they are pursuing instead another alternative explanation for the origin of why things are the way they are? It's the chicken or the egg theory. Which came first? That's important to understand when you come to this study. Secondly, this idea that you can't reconcile belief in science with a belief in God is built upon a redefinition of the word science. A redefinition that is based on circular reasoning. Let me explain what I mean. You know that science is built on what we call naturalism. Naturalism says nature is all that there is. That is, only that which I can see, observe, measure, test, replicate, that's the only thing that really is real. Nature is all that there is. you learned in school about the scientific method, being able to observe things and test things and replicate things. That's based on naturalism. Nature is all that there is. And that means in science, the way it's defined today, in science, there is no allowance for the supernatural. Super means above and beyond. Supernatural means that which is above and beyond that which we can see or measure or test or replicate. Now, when you understand that, you understand why such a self-imposed limitation is the reason evolutionists have been highly successful in keeping their view as the only view that's presented in the classroom.
Thank you, Dr. Jeffress, and thank you for listening to Pathway to Victory today. We look forward to its continuation next time. I mentioned earlier about the brand new book by Dr. Jeffress that's the foundation of this series. It's called How Can I Know? Answers to Life's 7 Most Important Questions. Well, I'm pleased to let you know that this book has just been released and that you can get your copy today with a generous gift of any amount to this ministry. In this book, as you've heard from the great teaching by Dr. Jeffress, he looks at the 7 most common and challenging questions people have when it comes to God, the Bible, and religion. If you've ever had these questions pointed at you for your response only to feel backed up against the wall, the insight in this book will give you the confidence you need to know how to respond. You don't want to wait. Get it today. The number to get your copy of How Can I Know is 1-866-999-2965. Write that down. Or online at ptv.org. This book gets right down to the most basic level in answering these everyday yet pretty hard questions. Call now, 1-866-999-2965. Or online at ptv.org. And for $75 or more, we'll send you the book, the complete study guide in a beautiful binder, as well as all 11 CDs from this series. So get in touch with us now, 866-999-2965, or online at ptv.org. Dr. Jeffress, today's message has definitely opened our eyes, and I'm sure you've got some final thoughts on it as well.
I want to remind you of something we said today. Doubt is not a sin. In many ways, it is a prerequisite to faith. There's nothing wrong with having doubts as long as you do something with those doubts. And this series, How Can I Know, is designed to help you answer any doubts you have. Maybe you've been too embarrassed to voice them to someone, but you've sincerely wondered, how do I really know there's a God? How can I know there's really a place called heaven that I'm going to one day? How can I know that this book, the Bible, is really true? All of us have doubts like that. Like I shared with you today, I've had doubts before. The important thing is to turn to the right place to have those doubts resolved. And that's what this series is going to do. We're going to give you the best answers, the best arguments, the best research available to answer these most important questions in life. Now, this entire series is based on my new book, just released last week, How Can I Know? Answers to Life's 7 Most Important Questions. And for your gift of any amount, we would love to send this book to you. Simply call us at 1-866-999-2965 or go onto our website at ptv.org. Now, our special resource offer, this is incredible what our team has put together. For your generous gift of $75 or more, listen to this, we'll send you not only the book, but we will send you the 8.5 by 11 binder that contains all of the notes for this series, and we'll send you the 11 CDs containing all of these messages. Now, to take advantage of that offer, call us today at 1-866-999-2965 or go onto our website at ptv.org. Thank you again for joining us. Thank you for your financial support that makes this ministry possible. We'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of Pathway to Victory.
Today, we heard the first part of this message from Dr. Jeffress. Here's a little sample of what we can look forward to next time.
Go outside, look at the trees, the grass, the sky, and ask yourself the question, why do I see something rather than nothing? And if you want to get more introspective, ask yourself, why do I see at all? If you want to really blow your mind, ask yourself the question, why am I asking myself this question? Why is there something rather than nothing?
That's what we can look forward to next time here on Pathway to Victory, as Dr. Jeffress continues in this message called, How Can I Know There Is a God? Maybe you've had this exact question directed at you, but how have you responded? Were you stumped, or did you know exactly how to answer? Well, that's the reason for this important series from Dr. Jeffress called How Can I Know? It's going to give you the confidence in knowing how to respond with knowledge, insight, solid evidence, and biblical accuracy. So be sure to catch the program next time as Dr. Jeffress continues answering this important question. Thanks again for joining us today on Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress. Go to our website at ptv.org to share your thoughts on the message today that was preached by Dr. Jeffress, pastor of First Baptist Church of Dallas. And don't forget to call us with your generous gift to Pathway to Victory to get your copy of this amazing new book by Dr. Jeffress called How Can I Know? It's going to help you know how to respond to those hard-hitting questions. Honestly, this may very well be one of the most valuable resources you'll ever have, as you'll probably use it on a regular basis. The number is 1-866-999-2965 or online, ptv.org. Call or click, but do it today. And be sure to join us tomorrow for Tuesday's program as Dr. Jeffress continues this foundational confidence-building series called How Can I Know? We'll see you next time, right here on Pathway to Victory.